Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of RSBC's Unseen. Today we're going to be talking about losing sight later on in life. We'll be sharing some personal stories and tips and tricks with you. I'm joined by Kaya.
Hello.
And we're also joined by a special guest who works for RSBC. She leads the youth forum and will be asking us some questions today. And it's Sally.
Hey, everyone. Charlotte, do you want to tell us a bit about when you lost your eyesight, kind of what happened and just kind of, explore it with us?
So I was at university studying nursing. I was about 6 months into my course when I lost my sight. So I was only 18 and I'd been fully sighted for the rest of my life before that. And I literally just realised one day that I couldn't see out of one eye properly. I think I was like, in the bath or the shower or something, washing my face, and just suddenly thought, oh, I can't. But I thought nothing of it. I thought I'd got soap in my eye. But then I was actually staying at home because I was on a placement in a hospital, which was closer to like my mum and dad's rather than where I was staying at uni. And I told my mum and her response was panic and, oh, my God, we've got to go to Moorfields. So that set my panic off. I was originally told that I had a condition. Well, they thought it might have been a condition called optic neuritis, which is actually completely curable with a course of steroids. So I was still quite positive and I didn't really notice the sight loss because the other eye was compensating for it. But then I went into hospital for the steroid treatment and I was there for 3 days. And on the third day, I woke up and couldn't see out of the other eye. So that ruled out optic neuritis. The steroid treatment obviously didn't work. And it wasn't that. So then I went through months and months and months of tests, you know, MRI scans, lumbar punctures, you know, you name it, I probably had it. before they realised it was actually a condition that was in my family. My brother had it at the age of 11, called Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. But with that condition, you're always told females don't get it, which is why my diagnosis was a bit different. When we told them it was in the family, everyone at Moorfields was like, nope, you're female, it's not that. And eventually they realised it actually is that. So that's when I was diagnosed. And it's a very, very rare hereditary condition that affects your central. So I haven't really got central vision. I can't see any detail, can't legally drive. I'm registered blind on paper. So I've learned to use my peripheral vision a bit, but I've got barely any central vision and can't see any detail around me. And the way that I described that, which I heard from someone else, was I can see a bit of everything, but not all of anything. So I can't make out much, but yeah, that's how I lost my sight.
That's so interesting. So I didn't know that you had a condition that the doctors basically said you couldn't get as a woman. That's really odd that it was in your family and they still didn't kind of take that into account.
Very rare that females get it. I believe they did say I was the first female that they have seen at Moorfields with it. I have seen another female that's got it. So there are others out there, but I think it's such a rare condition anyway. And if you look at the figures, it's so rare for women that they just didn't think it was that. And you can't really diagnose it. So we know I had the gene because every woman in my family chain will have the gene. So you can't just test to see if I've got it and they say it's that. So they have to like rule out everything else. They had to rule out a brain tumour, which was quite scary. That's why I had the MRI. So yeah, that's the only way that they could work it out, was sort of ruling out everything else.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise you'd had, as a sight person, you don't realise like how much testing goes into, you know, kind of finding out what is actually causing the sight loss. So it's interesting to hear that
I think the worst test I had was a lumbar puncture. I will never ever have one of them again.
I had a really bad eye and headache once, and I went to the doctors and they were like, you might have blood on your brain, go to the hospital. And that was one thing they could said I might have had to have, and I didn't have to have it.
What was that acupuncture?
No, lumbar puncture.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
they like drain fluid from your spine, basically.
Oh gosh,
it's not like some people take it quite well, but I think you're meant to like lay down after and all sorts. And I had it, and then they whisked me off for other tests, and I just was nonstop.
The worst thing I did was I stupidly Googled a picture of it when I was waiting in hospital.
Oh my god!
I had sunglasses on because I couldn't look at the light. They were like panicking because they thought there might be blood in your brain, so we might have to do a lumbar puncture to find out what it is. And yeah, I Googled the picture of the needle that they use, and it's like massive. So I wouldn't recommend anyone to give you a description of what that looks like, because I saw it and cried. So yeah, that's fine. Kaya, do you want to just explain a bit how you lost your sight and kind of, you know, just give us a bit of background into yours as well?
So I became visually impaired at the age of 15. I was in the middle of a tennis match playing for my county, and suddenly I can see the play on the other side of the court. And I then had an emergency opticians went to the opticians and had an appointment, and they put some dye in the back of my eye into my eye, and they saw that at the back of my eye my optic nerve was raised. And I then went to a hospital and in an ambulance, and it was confirmed that I had a non-cancerous brain tumor. And I then had to have an hour operation to debulk the tumor. However, on the same evening of the operation, my mum had a heart attack and passed away. So everything happened at the same time, and my life felt like it was turned upside down.
That must have been terrifying, Kaya. You're so strong to come out of that. I didn't realise it was all at the same time. That must have been so scary.
Well, my dad didn't tell me what was going on until after the operation, because I was nervous enough as it was.
Of course.
And also during the operation, after the operation, there was obviously a lot of excessive bleeding in my head. And then a blood clot formed in my short-term memory area. So I had no idea. I was literally, it felt like I was in a bubble. I had no idea what was going on. And then I kept asking my dad and my brother, where's mum? Where's mum? And I kept having to go through the grieving process. So it was really, really difficult. I mean, also, I can go to my mum's funeral, because I was in hospital, and, you know, there was quite a few things that were really quite difficult. So
yeah, of course. So I didn't realize that because I know you said about having the short-term memory loss before. I didn't realize it, what it happened and when it had happened. So that would have been a lot for you to deal with it, you know, at one time. So that's, yeah, sorry to hear that, Claire. I didn't realize it all happened at once. That must have been like so scary to not realize what was going on as well, obviously, like you said.
Yeah, completely. And then I remember I remember the rest of my memory came back actually on Christmas Day that year. So I mean, I still have a bit of a short-term memory, but it's healed like 90%, around 90% now.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, that was good. You got, you know, that came back to you as well on Christmas Day as well. I feel like
I know.
Thanks for sharing that as well. That's I think everyone that I've spoken to that has lost their sight later on in life or has a completely different story as well. There's not one story like another, and obviously just you two sharing your story there, I think that goes to show how different everyone's sight loss journey is. I think obviously I'm just, you know, it's hard to put myself in that position, but like, what would you, if someone was to go through a similar experience to you going through that, like what kind of tips or what would you have liked to have known or have heard at the time that could have made things easier for you?
I think one of the main things is just like breathe and stop and don't expect things to carry on as normal. I think that was my sort of biggest mistake, that I was at uni and obviously I had to quit because I couldn't do nursing. And I was sort of sitting at home and I just expected to, you know, find a job and be able to go out and do things. And then it hits you really hard when you can't, because you sort of, because I mean, I don't know the difference of losing sight at birth, but I guess it's the sense of you don't really know what you've missed and you you adapt from birth.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for me, it was like, I think I expected everything to just fall into place and me to learn how to do everything again really quickly. And that doesn't happen. But I also think give stuff a go. So like, don't expect everything to happen, but at the same time, don't sit there and think that you can't do anything. And I think advice for people's like friends and family is don't tell anyone they can't do anything, because the worst thing, my parents love me to bits and I know that, and it's only because they love me, but they would like get worried if I was going to go out, and then that makes me worry more. Whereas if they would have just sort of relaxed and be like, oh, it's fine, you know, I wouldn't have even cared if they tried to follow me at a distance I couldn't see and just to check I was okay, because I wouldn't have known. But that, like, it's the way they would get a bit really worried, and then I'd suddenly panic, and then that would stop me wanting to do something I'd sort of built up the courage to do.
Mm.
Yeah. Because for me, like, when the rest of my memory came back, I was like, okay, so what now, basically? But I would say one thing would be is, like, to make sure that you are up to date with all types of like technology available, because that helps, you know, such as my short-term memory, writing reminders on my phone, that sort of thing. And I found that very helpful, and you know, just adapting to become visually impaired and also, you know, with my memory at the same time.
Yeah, that must have been a lot to adapt to as well.
I definitely agree with the technology, because when I lost my sight, I had one of them old BlackBerry phones. I don't know if anyone remembers them.
Oh my god, with the tiny keys.
I definitely do remember those.
I remember them, but they all crashed at the same time. Because when I was in hospital, I had a BlackBerry, and then literally overnight, I cannot see anything on the screen or the tiny keys.
Yeah, and it doesn't have accessibility. Like an iPhone is brilliant. You know, it's got Zoom, VoiceOver, whatever you need. And you have to learn to use them, but they're there. With a BlackBerry, I remember trying to use that silly app called Screen Munch or something to take a picture of my screen and then trying to zoom in on it. It just didn't work. But, you know, if anyone wants to give things a try and has a phone they can't use, I did bring EE and gave them a sob story. And they gave me an iPhone.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I remember having a BlackBerry, and they were rubbish at the best of times. I can't imagine like them being very accessible back then.
They had no settings whatsoever. They were really bad.
I mean, I remember asking my dad to read out like what's on the screen. I couldn't even see what was on the screen when I became visually impaired. But I mean, and it shows how lucky that, you know, like with their iPhones, how they have such good accessibility settings, as well as MacBooks, you know, along with their, you know, technology, accessible technology available at the RNIB. So computer programs such as Supernova and Zoom Text, I think, are really good.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think my history, like I worked in accessible tech. That's how I got into kind of the VI community. I was a specialist technician for visual impairment in Hackney Council many moons ago. So that was my first kind of foray into kind of accessible tech, and it was such a big kind of wide world to kind of get involved in, and you know, learning how everything worked, and you know, was really amazing for me, and just seeing the benefit of them as well for the community is always incredible. Like how much it's moved on since, you know, even in the past 6 or 7 years, is really, really great. It's getting more and more accessible by the day, which is incredible.
I'm so glad like I live now and not 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? I think even with lockdown, we're all kind of appreciative of technology at the moment.
And
working from home and everyone, you know, not being able to see people, I think, you know, using things like Zoom and Teams and all this kind of online communication stuff that we have as well is really useful. But how have you guys
found it? I think it's not even just for visually impaired people as well, because like at work, I've got a Windows laptop, and they've actually got some brilliant built-in stuff now as well, which they never used to. And I use that, but I try and share it with everyone. I mean, I've got another visually impaired person that their sight's deteriorating, so I share a lot with them. But even some of the others at my work, like I use inverted colours, and a lot of people just generally like the coloured contrast change anyway. So they all seem to start using things like that now. And like the Zoom, we use some sort of systems on at work where, it, you know, it's really bad tiny writing and or photocopies and stuff like that. So they all like know how to use the Zoom now and stuff like that. So it's just good to generally know anyway. And I don't think many people know it's all out there, or like even the voiceover on the phone. I've now told a lot of dyslexic people about that because they use it. So it's like, you know, it's really handy to know these stuff in general.
Yeah, and because also, like, unfortunately, these sort of things aren't advertised well, so you have to find it out for yourself. I mean, one thing which I bought from the RNIB was a digital magnifier that I can just put in my handbag, and that's been really useful for me because I can't see see like small print writing.
I use one of them every single day at work to read it. All my paperwork at work is a little electronic magnifier that I actually got from RSVP.
They're so good, aren't they? I find them so useful.
I never knew about it, and then I found one at RSVP when we were clearing out the office, and they said I could have it, so that was brilliant. And then when I started work, I just took it in thinking, oh, this might come in handy, and I literally now use it every single day. not working at home, but when I'm in the office, I deal with quite a lot of paperwork, so yeah.
I mean, even on the iPhone, like, it has a built-in magnifier which I can use, like, to read like small print letters and that sort of thing. Yeah. So that helps. And also with you know, like, when traveling with the travel assistance available, like we said on the travel podcast, and then as well as being able to use like the disabled travel card, which I think has been really useful over the years, although it was difficult to find out about these sort of things.
So, I was going to ask, actually, how, so, you know, you've gone through this like massive change and suddenly, you know, dealing with sight loss, like, what how did you find out about things that were kind of accessible to you, or, you know, opportunities you could engage with, or just, you know, finding out like how to use a screen reader or how to, you know, use a magnifier and stuff like that? Like, what were your kind of first steps in trying to find that kind of stuff out?
The internet.
Of course, to Google.
If you go to Moorfields, they've got a low vision clinic, so they told me about some things, but they so do things like give you binoculars and expect you to walk down the street using binoculars, which I didn't want to do. But I use them. But then I think, because another tip I was going to say is try your best to reach out to other visually impaired people in there is a big VI community, and one of the main things that helped me was seeing others and sort of thinking, which can sound a bit strange, but, well, if they can do it, why can't I? I mean, there was people that I met that could see a lot less than me, and they're like, you know, meeting me, getting off a bus and meeting me, and I'm like, hang on a minute, they've just got a bus, if they can get a bus, surely I can go and do that. And that's how I found out about a lot, but also the internet, but not just like Google sort of stuff, like Facebook. I would join a few groups and they all talk and share. They share articles and tips and loads of stuff. And then it was charities, obviously RSBC, going to see the assistive tech guy. He helped me relearn how to use a laptop pretty much. So yeah, things like that. But then I think it's just playing around as well. And on my phone, I sat there with my brother one day and just played around with all the settings and just sort of worked out what was what and what it could do, because I'd heard that an iPhone was good, but I hadn't really heard what was on it. So I just had to sit there with someone and we just played around with loads of settings.
I also, when I studied at the Royal National College for the Blind in Hereford, we had one-to-one tech sessions which were really helpful, and it they went through like all the accessibility settings and also the accessible like technology that was available, so that was really helpful as well.
Uh, How did you get involved with RSPC? I know that. So for people who don't know me, I'm Sally. I work at RSPC. But it would be good to know how, you know, you got involved with kind of certain charities and organisations to become, you know, I would describe both of you as advocates for other young people with vision impairments. So it'd just be interesting to find out your kind of motivation behind like getting involved with us or like with other organisations and just how you kind of went about that after, you know, kind of losing your sight later on in life. Like, what was your motivations kind of behind that?
Well, my brother was supposed to be running the marathon this year, and he introduced me to the RSPC, and then I was told about the youth forum, and then I recently decided to apply. There we go. Quite short.
Yeah. No, I like that. It's short and sweet. I think, you know, like you said, sharing things between either family members or in the community and stuff seems to be a really big part. What was your kind of experience with that kind of thing, Charlotte?
So my family and friends sort of kept suggesting charities, and I did look at a few. I mean, a lot of other blind charities are either too broad or too specific, I found. Mm. Not saying they're not good, but, you know, they don't, you know, I was in the position where I thought, right, I want to do something now. What can I do? What I didn't know if I'd be able to work or sort of if I could, as well, what job can I do? Mm. And I just wanted like that sort of advice and guidance. But some of the other charities was more, you need to know what you want to do and we'll help you get there. Or, you know, or the other way around where it was sort of too vague or like covers too much. But yeah, I started to, you know, like I said earlier, when I was sort of reaching out to a lot of the VI community on social media and stuff, I actually found a guy that I had mutual friends with. I sort of knew of the guy already from years back. He actually, when my brother first lost his sight, I went to a VI school, but only for a few years, and then went to mainstream because he got a lot of sight recovery. No one knows how or why. But he actually went to school with my brother. So I knew of this person. And we just got talking, and I've always been really, really into sports, and I completely stopped any sport when I lost my sight. So this was about 2 years after.
Yeah, likewise.
And then he told me about this VI cricket that he'd done. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should give that a go. And I started that. And then on the first day I went with him, there was a group of other people there that all went to RSPC, and they're all talking about this charity, and like, you know, all the things they've done, and this assistive tech guy, and you know, the social and peer group and all that. And I was like, that charity sounds good. Why have I not found that one? And I think a few days later that one of them sort of called the charity for me and took me there because I didn't travel on my own at that point. And I went to meet with someone in the employability team to start with. And I remember like breathing out because I went, I just want to know what job I can do. And they looked at me and went, you can do any job you want to do. And I was like, what? I don't think so. But yeah, so that, and then I think it just went and expanded from there. And I think I've now done pretty much most of the, tried most of the sessions from RSBC and been part of the youth forum for a good few years now.
You started the youth forum before me. You're a staple at RSBC, Charlotte. Everyone you mentioned Charlotte to, they're like, yep, we know who she is. So yeah, just to...
I've got to say that, like, one thing when I became visually impaired, which I found really helpful, was being open to my friends and family.
Definitely.
What my eyesight condition was, and like so that like the people around me could adapt as well, in terms of you know, helping me when I'm struggling on certain days, as in like whether it's my eyesight or getting used to you know, the frustration of getting used to becoming visually impaired, because that also was something that took a while, is, you know, becoming visually impaired, and you know, you get that question of why me, that sort of thing. So
I think that was one of
being as open to friends and family around you, if it's helpful. Sorry, what was that, Charlotte?
I said I think that was my biggest problem, that I wasn't open enough. Like, I was, but you know, like, I was not scared to ask for help, but I was almost thinking, oh, I can do this myself. And then, I don't know, simple example, say if you go out to a party and there's a buffet and you're sort of standing with someone and you want to say to them, you need to tell me what food's there, and you're not saying anything and they don't know whether you need it or not. And then I'm sort of almost too scared to ask or too shy to ask. And it was situations like that, I think, where like, or like I'd want to go out and I was too scared to say to one of my friends, look, would you come and meet me, to go. Instead I'd just say I'm not coming, because they didn't know that, they didn't know whether they needed to come and meet me or whether I could meet them somewhere or what. So I think that was one of my biggest problems. But going to RSVC really helped as well, because I met so many other VI people. And I, you know, like I said earlier, that was one of the biggest things that helped me. And funny you saying that your brother was running the marathon this year, because I run the marathon for RSVC last two years ago.
Oh wow, gosh. Because it, you know, it takes time to come to terms with being visually impaired, and you know, it is frustrating at first. So, you know, being as open as you can with you know, the people around you is definitely one thing I found very helpful.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like you know, when you decide to do the marathon unassisted, you realise you have to tell the guys that you can't see your wave number. I mean, I don't know. I want to do it again, but I think that was my way of thinking. Right, I've done so much with RSVC now, I need to give back. So I just decided to do it. It was completely out of the blue. I'd never thought of doing the marathon before, and I thought, yeah, I'm gonna do it. I put my name down, and I'd done it. The amount of times I was asked if I wanted a guide, and I was like, no, I'll be fine. And then on the day, I realized that, you know, I couldn't tell how far I'd run for the whole marathon. So it was sort of just keep going and you'll get there eventually. But I didn't have a clue. But even with that, it's sort of like being open. I actually said to some people along the way, oh, how far have we gone? I'm visually impaired. But I think they looked at me thinking, what is she on about? She's running a marathon.
I've got to say one thing that definitely took a while for me to get used to is using a cane. You know, because I found it was quite strange at first to use, but then I found that it was really, really useful, especially as when I was walking around in new places, and particularly the London Underground was really useful.
Is there anything else that you can think of that you would like to tell someone that's kind of, you know, someone's older and they've just lost their sight? Like, what would you say to them?
Go for it.
Off the back of what you're saying about the cane, it's sort of like what I said earlier about give things a go. Don't be sort of scared or shy or embarrassed with anything. I mean, I still don't use a cane regularly, but I do always have it in my bag. And say, for instance, I used to be on my way home from work and my train would stop running, so I have to then go through Victoria, which is an absolute nightmare. I would just panic and try and deal with it, whereas I've realised now, what's the harm in just getting my cane out? I also used to have a cymbal cane, but that just wound me up because no one knew what it was. So then I plucked up the courage, like, that's okay, I'm just going to get a longer one so people are more aware of what it is. And that was sort of a big step. And I think, even though that took me years, and I'm sure it will for a lot of people, coming from someone that's now done it years on, these are things that you think people are going to be like, you know, embarrassed or stuff like that, but honestly, no one really cares. Like, no one's going to judge you that much for having a cane in your hand. In fact, they're probably going to be more pissed off if you walk into them and you haven't got a cane in your hand and tell them you're in bed.
Yeah, completely. I was just going to say one more point, you know, because a lot of people, when they become visually impaired, they think that's the end of entertainment. But cinemas, theatres and concert halls offer special concessions to visually impaired people, and they will give you priority seating so you get the best visual experience and like financial.
And use audio description as well.
Yeah, definitely.
On like TVs and stuff. I never even used to want to use that, because I think when you first use it, don't get me wrong, it's quite annoying and you start telling the person to shut up. I think most people have done that. Like, I'm sure most people have, unless they use it like, you know, from it's very hard to get used to. And I can sit right in front of my big TV and like sort of make things out. But now audio description is just turned on constantly. And like, even when I'm watching it with my partner, he's realized he can multitask while audio description's on, and he even like it now because he can sit there and do what he's doing and listen to the audio description. So there's just so much out there. So I think just don't be afraid and like give anything to go, like tiny baby steps, and say to your friend, can you come and meet me outside my house? Or, you know, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
And if your friends are true friends, they will do that for you.
Yeah, and then also I was going to say, you know, make sure you reach out to societies and groups that are there to help vision impaired people, such as not only the RSPC, but also the RNIB and Victor, who are a voluntary organisation who do bespoke holidays for blind and vision impaired people as well. So, you know, there is a lot out there. It's just trying to find it, and that is one thing that I found difficult because, you know, the councils don't know everything when you first meet them, when you become vision impaired, but there's a lot.
Yeah, I would actually say don't listen to everything a social worker says because they're
I completely agree.
I'd also say the very old saying, if there is no such word as can't. I mean, I used to say, I can't drive a car. Now, sorry, but with RSPC, I've gone and I've driven two cars. So I can no longer say that. So, you know, I mean, I've run the marathon unassisted. I've gone rock climbing. I've done, like, more than what I think I ever would have done before I lost my sight. Like, so many more adventurous things. And I've been on, like, residential trips with other charities where it's not even specifically for visually impaired people. And I've done everything everyone else done.
Yeah,
so,
I've done the same.
And I've heard too many people now, which really frustrates me, say they can't work because they're visually impaired. And trust me, you can, because I do, and I know many other people that do.
I mean, I remember when I was in hospital, and I remember my one aim was I wanted to do to complete my Gold Duke of Edinburgh Award, and I managed to do it. And you know, so it just shows. You know, you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Definitely. And I think knowing you both for the time that I've known you as well, you two are really great examples of that. And I love, you know, we had in our sisterhood group recently, someone was like, oh, I can't get a job or I can't do this. And Charlotte was like, yes, you can. I'm literally sitting here as proof that you can, you know. And I love that you both have that attitude about it. And it's really lovely to work with you both because you're such like, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, you're such, you know, inspiration, but you've just made, because I know that some people find that patronizing, but like you've made such a, like, you're both really adventurous and you've both kind of not let this stop you at all, which is always lovely to see. And for you to pass it on to other people, I think that's the great thing that I see working with you both, is that you do have an effect on other people in the community, have a positive effect. So it's really, really lovely to see that as well. I love working with you both. And like I said, I think you're really, you are inspirational to other young people within RSPC, especially. I know you are. So yeah, I think you should just know that. And I think, you know, credit where credit is due. So yeah. And obviously, you know, we work together on the RSPC Youth Forum. And Charlotte was there. I took over last September. I think it was the first meeting we had. So Charlotte was there already. And Kaya, you joined earlier this year, I want to say, was it? Or is it? Oh, this year's kind of gone out the window, hasn't it, really? Like dates and stuff. Yeah. So it's just this period of time.
I've got to say, it's definitely helped, you know, being part of the Youth Forum during this lockdown. It's been so nice to have something to focus on.
That's really good to hear as well.
I think my work's been hectic enough.
yeah I love the forum as well. Like, obviously, you know, we have monthly meetings of the Youth Forum, and you know, it's really, we try and create a space that's, you know, gives you a voice for other vision impaired young people, and I think you do that really well. But yeah, it's also been hectic. Amazing having
you. I mean, I do the Youth Forum, but I've also done quite a lot of public speaking as well for RSPC and other charities. And that, to me, like, people say, oh, you like doing it, you know, because I've met some you know, high up people or a couple of celebrities and, you know, been on adverts. But that's really not the point. The reason I do it is I love it when someone does come up to me and ask me questions after, and then interested. And I don't care, you know, well, obviously, usually do it for fundraising purposes, but for me, it's standing up there and making people aware, you know, to stop all these negative perceptions or not
even
negative,
I agree.
Just wrong perceptions in general. And Stan saying yes. And I mean, with RSBC, it's quite obvious my speech, but with the other charity, my whole speech was done before I told them I was actually blind. So I gave them my story of how, you know, everyone turned into a stranger and the outside world come into a danger and all this. And it's not until right near the end I say it's all because I went blind, sort of thing. And I think that gives people the realization, because they're guessing and guessing. And I don't think anyone ever thinks, oh, she's visually impaired. You know, and then you tell them, and I think that's for me is what I love doing, is raising that awareness and helping others as well.
I did a speech just before we went to lockdown, and it was Credit Suisse and another bank, and it's, you know, creating that awareness, I think, as well, to other people, and you know, it's nice just telling your story, I think. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, definitely. And I've both, yeah, like I said, you guys being part of the forum is like, you know, taking that and kind of making sure that you have that voice for young people within the VI community and us. So yeah, it's really great.
That's all for today. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next time.